Our Bible reading today is taken from the second half of the Bible, the New Testament. We're going to read there in the Gospel of John. We're going to start our reading in chapter 13. John chapter 13, we're going to read from verse 30 and we're going to read into John chapter 14. John chapter 13 at verse 30 reads as follows, and this is the word of the living God. As soon as Judas had taken the bread, he went out, and it was night. When he was gone, Jesus said, "Now the Son of Man is glorified, and God is glorified in him. If God is glorified in him, God will glorify the Son in himself, and will glorify him at once. My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I am going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Simon Peter asked him, "Lord, where are you going?" Jesus replied, "Where I am going, you cannot follow now, but you will follow later." Peter asked, "Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you." Then Jesus answered, "Will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times. Do not let your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. My Father's house has many rooms. If that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come back and take you to be with me, that you also may be where I am. You know the way to the place where I am going." Thomas said to him, "Lord, we don't know where you're going, so how can we know the way?" Jesus answered, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really know me, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him." Philip said, "Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough for us." Jesus answered, "Don't you know me, Philip, even after I've been among you such a long time? Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak in my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work. Believe me when I say that I am in the Father and the Father is in me. Or at least believe in the evidence of the works themselves. Very truly, I tell you, whoever believes in me will do the works I have been doing, and they will do even greater things than these, because I am going to the Father. And I will do whatever you ask in my name, so that the Father may be glorified in the Son. You may ask me for anything in my name, and I will do it. If you love me, keep my commands." We're going to finish our reading there just now. We're going to return to that part of the Bible later on in our service. Well, if you've got your Bibles with you, please do open them at John chapter 14. John 14 at verse 1. That's the words we're going to be thinking of today, where Jesus says, "Do not let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me." Well, it was the strangest of weeks in many ways. The foreboding seemed to grow as the days passed. The routine things of life seemed to take on a significance that was slightly different to normal, even though pinpointing what the significance might be was quite hard to do. There was an unsettling that grew as more information was shared and details passed, to the extent that the future in that sense looked decidedly uncertain. Now, I'm not reading an extract from what somebody may say about the nation of Scotland in March 2020, as history records that this was the month that the deadly pandemic began to have an impact upon our nation. Rather, I am describing what took place in chapter 14 of John's Gospel. I'm describing what took place with Jesus and his disciples as they processed the information that Jesus gave to them, information that led them to be increasingly unsettled. There was a sense of unease, almost a sense of foreboding that was coming upon them. They'd heard that one of them was going to betray Jesus. They'd heard that each of them was going to abandon him. They'd been spoken that there was a degree of separation that was now going to take place, and none of these things were welcome. And into that environment, which in many ways troubled hearts may seem like a degree of an understatement, into that environment, Jesus speaks. Well, why are we speaking about these disciples? Don't we have enough troubles of our own today? Why are we speaking about what they went through? Well, we're speaking about what they went through because of the unfolding events that they were a part of left their hearts troubled, and yet there was somebody who they were pointed to deal with the troubled hearts that they had, and that very selfsame person is the one that we are to be pointed to today with our troubled hearts. Our troubles might be with regard to this virus and the impact it's going to have on our health, the impact it's going to have on our family, the impact it's going to have on the economy, the impact it's going to have on our freedoms, on our life moving forward. All these fears are very real. They're present. And so for many of us, perhaps even for all of us, our hearts are troubled. And so there's one person who says to troubled hearts, trust God and trust me. And it's that Jesus that we're going to focus on this morning to see what he has to say to us. And the reason we do so is that we're dealing with somebody who understands what life is like here. We're dealing with somebody who knows what it's like to witness fear and troubles, who knows what it's like to calm fears and troubled hearts, and who knows what it's like to experience a troubled heart. Let's go through these things in turn. Jesus knew what it was to witness fear and troubled hearts. I don't know about you, but I've never wanted to be a politician, and probably never more so than in these days. You look at Boris Johnson and you look at Nicola Sturgeon and you see the pressure on their faces. It must be huge as they try and process information that they are not trained in and somehow make decisions that are wise decisions and then convey it. In the media in recent days, you've seen certain images of the First Minister, the Prime Minister, getting briefed by these scientists, by these health officials. And on the basis of these briefings, they need to come and speak to the nation. They need to communicate in an informed manner, second-hand information about which they've been briefed. And I wouldn't have their job for anything on this earth. And for those of us who readily throw all manner of frustration at politicians, how these politicians need our prayers in a way that they've never needed them before. Pray for them, because they are doing the best that they can. When we talk about Jesus witnessing fear, it's not that he was briefed by others about it. It's not that there were individuals who came to Jesus and said, well, listen, you don't know what this is like yourself. You don't have the qualifications for this, so let me tell you, this is what happens. No, Jesus witnessed at first hand the fear and the troubled hearts in this world. We could think of many instances, many episodes of that. Think, for instance, of this man, Jairus. His daughter is unwell. And he is rocked to his very core as he tries to get to Jesus in order that Jesus might deal with his daughter. Disease has taken a hold of his daughter, and disease was feared possibly even more in Jesus' day than it is today. And Jesus sees the fear. He witnesses the troubled heart of Jairus, and he does something about it. Or we can think of the fear that was written all over the hearts of these grown men as disciples in the boat. We spoke about the boat in our kids' message there. I don't know if any of us have ever seen fear all over a group of men's faces. Perhaps we have to think of an image from a war movie that we've seen as these actors try to convey what the fear must actually be like. Who knows what's going to unfold? Maybe that's what we're going to be living with, fear written over grown men's faces, grown women's faces. Well, they come to Jesus and they are absolutely terrified. They're terrified and they wake him up and Jesus does something about it. And so whether it was disease or whether it was the fear of danger or whether it was the fear of the food supply, as they're afraid of these thousands of people who follow Jesus, but they don't have any food, or whether it was the fear of the spiritual realm, the demonic, Jesus witnessed at first hand the fears, the troubled hearts of individuals. So when we begin telling people today that there's somebody who understands what it's like to have a troubled heart, to have fears, and someone who speaks into these fears and says, "Trust me," we're speaking of somebody who understands. He has witnessed it. Now, the second stage is that you and I would wish at times to be able to calm people's fears. Now, probably we have done, when, if we think of young children at different points. Maybe they're scared of the dark or of a monster in a room or something like that, and we can calm their fears. But largely when we're dealing with adults, we can't calm fears. We wish we could calm fears, but we can't. But Jesus could, and he did. Whether it was the fears caused by disease or danger or food supply or the demonic, Jesus had the power, he had the authority to be able to calm these fears. Person after person in the Gospels could come forward and say that when they came to Jesus in their troubled heart, with the variety of different reasons why they came to Jesus, but they all came to the same person. When they came with these troubled hearts, they can all testify, they could testify one by one if they were alive, as to how Jesus soothed, calmed, took away their fears and their troubles. The disciples, even in this passage here, could tell us of a slightly different angle, because the disciples could say that Jesus came to their troubles. He took the initiative to address their troubles without them even bringing these troubles to Jesus. Jairus took his trouble to Jesus. The disciples took their troubles to Jesus. But on this occasion, Jesus took the initiative to go to those who were troubled. And he says to them, "Don't let your hearts be troubled. You believe in God? Believe in me." You see, Jesus didn't simply witness troubled hearts and fear. He was able to calm troubled hearts and fear. And so here we come to our first application for today's service, and it's this: where do you go with your troubled heart? Where do you go with the fears of what may or may not unfold in our country in days to come? Who do you take that to? We know there's a degree in which there's obvious benefit as we speak to each other, as we share our concerns. But we can't stop these concerns. We can't deal with them. So who do you go to with your troubled hearts? Put it in another way. Who is coming to you today in his word? Coming to you and to me as those who have troubled hearts. Who's coming to us and saying to us, "Trust me"? Well, it's Jesus. Every single detail of the troubles, the fears, the anxieties, Jesus is coming to us today. And he's taking the initiative. He's coming to people who have no claim on his intervention. We don't demand, we can't demand that he do things that because we've suddenly earned our way, built up some credit with Jesus. He's taking the initiative to come to troubled hearts who have no claim on him. And he's saying to us today, "Trust him." And he's saying, "Trust him," because not simply has he witnessed fear, and not simply is he able to calm fear, but more than that, he has experienced fear and troubles himself. When we think of the emotional life of Jesus, we tend to think of the most commonly attributed emotion in the New Testament. We think of his compassion. The compassion of Jesus is given to us in so many different parts of the Gospels, and it's truly a blessing for us to think about his compassion. His compassion is this internal pity towards all those in trouble, and it's joined with an external act, an outward act in mercy to deal with the trouble. So when Jesus saw individuals who were wandering and lost, sheep without a shepherd, he described them, his heart goes out to them and he does something about it. Time and again, Jesus has compassion. That's one of the emotions that the God-man has and experienced and showed in this world. Top of that, Jesus had the emotion of indignation and anger. That when Jesus saw wrongdoing in this world, whether it was perpetrated by religious bureaucrats who were burdening people with rules and traditions made by men as opposed to the truth of God's word, whether it was indignation and anger about things that the disciples should have known better about when they try to block children coming to Jesus. Always remember, boys and girls, if you're listening to this today, Jesus loves to have children close to him. And he speaks to you today as much as he speaks to the grown-ups. And when the grown-ups try to stop kids coming to Jesus, Jesus was really angry with the grown-ups. On top of that, we know the Bible teaches us Jesus had joy. His was a message of joy. It was good news of great joy. He rejoiced in his spirit. But another emotion, alongside compassion and alongside indignation and alongside joy, is fear. Is this troubled heart that Jesus had. Because a couple of chapters on from chapter 14, you have at the beginning of chapter 18 the detail of Jesus going into an olive grove, a garden. It was his favorite retreat. And in that garden, the other gospel writers in the books of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they tell us what took place in that garden before the betrayer came to bring this arresting party to take Jesus away. In that garden, Jesus, his understanding became crystal clear as to the next step that had to happen as he would remove fear for his people forevermore. For him, the clouds dispersed and there was complete clarity about an event that had been way in the distance that was now right up close. An event in which he would be dealing on behalf of all those who will look to him and trust him. He will be dealing with every single wrongdoing that we have ever committed. Every single sinful stray thought in our minds. Every wrong word that we've spoken. Every action that we've done that we cringe over. Every single one of these Jesus was going to deal with. He was going to absorb that to himself. He was going to face the holy justice of God. And it nearly crushed him. He was deeply, deeply moved in spirit and troubled. He was asking his friends to pray for him, to be with him. It's not that this has come out of nothing. Even the previous couple of chapters in John chapter 12, verse 27, Jesus says, "My soul is troubled, but what shall I say? Save me from this hour? No, for this is the reason I came." There's an agitation, there's an unease, there is a fear because of the prospect of facing the judgment of God. And that's a whole topic that we try and compartmentalize. You know, guys have this nothing box. Well, I suppose men and women have this box that actually they try and put into it and not ever to open, and it's the prospect of the judgment of God. Because that's partly what makes the fear of death so real for people, is that they know there must be something more. There has to be a purpose behind our lives. We've not simply come from nothing and going to nothing. There has to be a significance. And there is. God's given that significance. And God will one day call us to account. And here was Jesus, the prospect of facing the judgment of God for my sin and yours. And he is troubled. Oh, how he is troubled. And he faces a fear with no filter. And there was no one and nothing in this world that could possibly settle the troubled, fearful heart that Jesus had in that garden. You know what it's like when we're surprised, if someone jumps out in us and they surprise us, our heart kind of beats. And the only time our heart kind of beats that really fast is when we're afraid. And sometimes if you have been afraid, you know your heart beats so fast and you're almost hearing it echoing in your ears. Imagine how pounding the heart of Jesus must have been in that Garden of Gethsemane, because Jesus knows what it is to experience fear. And yet he says, "Don't be troubled." And so some of you may be sitting at home and think, well, okay, this is all fine and well, but what is so special about somebody who's witnessed fear, who's calmed fear, who has experienced fear. I mean, yes, you know, we may not be able to calm the fear bit much, but we've kind of witnessed it in others, we've experienced it in ourselves, we've experienced enough fear for a lifetime. And some people possibly have, especially of the older generation, because you've lived through warfare and you've lived through other hardships and perhaps even other diseases. But for most of us, we've not really been exposed to the fear of death in the way that other generations had. We've lived through a very strange time in our history as a nation because we've not had a war and we've not had a huge epidemic, a pandemic, for decades. And so the kind of fear of death has not really been there. And so I'm saying this because it partly explains the irrational behavior of people in our country. When the Australian Prime Minister talked about how ashamed he was of Australians for the way in which they were panic buying and hoarding all the food in Australia, it's exactly the same here. People are not thinking rationally. And this inner instinct to somehow retain control is being evidenced with individuals as they're lining up at 6 o'clock on a morning to try and get into Tesco's, the 24-hour Tesco, to try and gather all that they can at the expense of other people gathering what they can, and even our healthcare workers not being able to get what they need. And there's that selfishness that this fear has revealed almost. And somebody once put it this way: the more insecure we feel, the meaner we become. And there's a lot of truth in that. And he goes on to say that the more insecure we feel, the meaner we become, the more the inner tyrant is actually released. And that's what we're almost seeing in our country, isn't it? So if you are one of these hoarders, these panic buyers, please stop it. Please make sure that there's enough to go round. Let's make sure we're loving our neighbors, that there is enough to go round. But you see, for Jesus, when he's in that position of fear, his reaction is the complete opposite. Because instead of being a selfish, self-controlled, self-centered reaction, his is the complete opposite because it's a selfless reaction. Because he is going to willingly head towards this fear on behalf of those who will benefit forevermore through his work. And so you're saying, well, why? What's going on here? What is the big issue? Well, the big issue is the identity of the one who's going towards this fear and his associated mission. Well, who is he? Well, chapter 14 tells us, verse 2, he is the Son of the Father that has many rooms. This is a picture of heaven. He's describing himself as the Son of the Father in heaven. Verse 6, he tells himself that he is the way to heaven. He is the way to the Father. He's not simply the exclusive Son. He is the exclusive way. There is no other. And on top of that, he tells us that he is the one who is so connected to the Father that he reveals the Father. Look at verse 9. Anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. Believe me, verse 11, when I say the Father's in me and I'm in the Father. Let's believe me in the evidence of the works themselves. He's saying to the disciples who were troubled, he's saying to us today in our troubles, he's pointing us to his identity, that this is none other than the unique, exclusive Son of God, the eternal one from heaven. He is the one through whom we come to God. Many people engage in conversations and say, well, we know there must be something out there. We know that we're not particularly religious, but this has kind of rocked us a little bit. We don't quite know what to do. Maybe the Christianity's got some kind of answer to us, but how do we know about God? Well, if you want to know about God, you look to Jesus. That's what the Bible says. Because Jesus reveals the heart of God to us. He reveals the heart of God in this perfect, compassionate way. He reveals God to us in a way that deals with our deepest needs. Because we want to have somehow completion. But we never reach completion. We never reach completion in our relationships, in our work environment, in our finances, with our possessions. There's always that sense of unease. And yet we've got one who is infinite, this God, who is watching over us. We long for permanence. When things are going well, we want it to stay going well. But we know that nothing is permanent in this world. And that longing for permanence is met in the one who is eternal. And we long for stability and security for us and for our loved ones. And yet everything is insecure, it's unstable, it's uncertain, it's chaotic. Who rules? Who reigns? And yet in God we find one who is absolutely unchanging and dependable. And so what God has done in Jesus Christ is that the one who is eternal has willingly become bound in time. The one who was infinite has willingly become limited. And the one who provides ultimate security is the one who himself faced ultimate danger. Why? Well, that takes us on to the mission of Jesus. Think about what we've done today. Jesus says to troubled hearts, don't let your hearts be troubled. Trust in God, trust also in me. He can say that because he has not simply witnessed fear, he has calmed fears, and he has faced fear himself. And he's not reacted in a selfish, self-orientated way like we may do, the complete opposite. His is a selfless reaction. Why? Because of who he is, the eternal Son, come from heaven to earth, so that by trusting in him, he will one day take us from earth to heaven, to the abode of God. This mission that he has come on is a mission to banish fear. It's a mission to deal with fear once and for all. Where does fear stem from? Well, it stems from the fact this world is not as it should be. And we know that. We live with the futility of a world that is not working right. No matter how much we may try, things somehow don't operate properly in the way that they should do. Death and decay are part of our existence. They've now come right to the forefront of our existence with this virus, but they're part of our existence. People die. Things die. Dreams die. Relationships die. We're in a world that the Bible describes that's groaning because it's not how it should be. And we're part of this world. We're living in this groaning world. We're out of harmony and out of sync with our environment. We're out of sync with each other because we're out of sync with God. We are out of sync with God because of sin. Because having rejected and ignored God, having ignored what he has said to us in his word, We have not reacted as we should do to his commands, his call, his claim upon our lives. And so everything is out of sync. Our relationship with him, with each other, with the world. The mission of Jesus was to deal with sin at the root cause of these relationships being out of sync. And because these relationships are out of sync, there is fear. There's fear of the world, the environment that we live in. There's fear that comes from relationships not being where they ought to. There's fear that comes from not being right before God. Jesus has come to deal with sin. And he's paid for it. He's dealt the death nail to the greatest threat to humanity. To the most contaminating virus in the history of existence. He's done something about it. He did that on the cross. My sin has been paid for, as has yours, if you will look to him. Picture it this way. It's as if Jesus is walking to the dock of a courtroom. And he's walking up there and he is literally dripping wet. He is drenched with every mark of the sin of my life and your life. And he is the sinless one, has willingly allowed himself to be drenched with that sin. And he stands there in the dock and he faces that verdict of guilty. But it's more than that, because we need to go from a dock in a courtroom to a cross on a hill. Because it was on that cross at Calvary, with his blood being shed in my place and your place, that my sin is dealt with, my debt is paid, my sin is covered, and your sin can be dealt with, and your debt paid, your sin covered. It's only on that cross. And because of that work, Jesus can say to troubled hearts, don't fear. Don't be afraid. Trust me. Because if you trust me with the biggest issue of your existence, you are safe no matter what. I don't know what freedom looks like for you, or what you think freedom's going to look like when this is over. Is it simply a return to routine? Get the kids up, get them to school, get to work, go back to this frantic pace of life? Is it simply we just go back to our existence, coming here on a Sunday if we choose, or maybe not coming anywhere near a place of worship? Is it that we just go back to our hobbies, go back to Cali Park? Other teams in blue are available. What's it going to be? But you see, when this is over, whenever that is, and whatever that will look like, our freedom as a country is going to be very different. But your personal freedom can be immense, complete, full. And the thing is, that freedom that can be immense, complete, and full after this crisis can be experienced during this crisis. Because you can be freed from fear for whatever's going to happen, because you are trusting in one who knows. It's remarkable, Jesus never minimizes our fears, because he's witnessed life in this world. And he knows that there are things in this life that are fearful. Death itself has been described as the last enemy. He doesn't minimize our fears, but he says to us in our troubles, trust me, because he, and he alone, is eminently trustworthy. You may have listened to this today and just found only minimal parts that might have linked in with you. I hope there's been more that's linked in with your situation. But you may be sitting there today and think, well, this is fine and well, but what do I do next? This is information. This is telling me of a God who's speaking to me today. And is telling me to trust him. How do I do that? What do I do? Well, here's what you need to do. Wherever you are today, whether you're on your own, or whether you're in a room with some of your family, you need to get down on your knees. And you need to pray along the following lines. And say, Lord, you need to have mercy on me, because I'm a sinner. I'm not in control, and I'm fearful, and I want to know you, and I want to trust you. Please, in mercy, help me to do that. Jesus has promised, whoever comes to me, I'll never turn you away. Hold on to these truths today, tomorrow, this week, next week, for as long as we need, until Jesus calls us home. We're going to finish there.